Welcome to Dome Theory, the podcast where we dive into sports, pop culture, business, a variety of topics from the day, and I'm excited. I am thrilled to usher Logic, Bobby Tarantino, Robert Hall into the next phase of his career today, because this week we learned that he is going to be retiring from the rap game. 10 years, 6 studio albums later, countless side projects, features, and what became, in my eyes, one of the more unlikely hip-hop superstar stories that we've seen. This Under Pressure 2 album that we heard from him this week to wrap up his career ends late on the track A to Z, was a cut from him at 15 years old, riffing off some 90s announcer style hip-hop ad-libs, bars that he wrote up. It was his first recorded rap ever. That's how we came to know Logic, a hip-hop mega fan who was not only fans of A Tribe Called Quest and the great jazz rappers, Neo Soul Movement. We hear Erykah Badu's influence on here, Outkast. He also pulled from Drake, the emotional, vulnerable side, singing. Logic was never shy to singing on his tracks. The flows of a Kendrick, a Big Sean, J. Cole. I even hear some T.I. on a track like Amen here. La 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 la. Ma 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 ma. I'm no Logic, but you get what I mean. This guy would interpolate styles, play off a riff like Nas, My Life in Actuality, Life's a Bitch and Then You Die. He did all these things while also bringing mental health to the forefront, as he did on this album, and exploring big, larger topics, stepping into the cinema field, trying to craft screenwriting into his projects. Logic's shortfalls ultimately became how much he tried to do. An album like Everybody, looking back on it, tried to do everything, as I'll say in today's episode. But ultimately, I've been talking quite a bit about Gordon Hayward lately. I see some parallels between a Gordon Hayward, a guy who went to Butler, initially played tennis, obviously doesn't carry the look, and especially didn't carry the look of a basketball star, if you see what Gordon Hayward looked like when he got to Butler. Similar story for Logic. Skinny frame, pale skin. Some people even thought he was a white rapper as he got into the game, and as time grew, he became more polished, buffer, confident, started leading his team in Utah, and ultimately drove his team to the playoffs. And Logic, Under Pressure, he ended the incredible true story. He crafts some hits with Everybody, wins a Grammy with the 1-800 song, and all of a sudden he's leading a label imprint, Visionary Music Group, and he accumulates enormous amount of power in the rap sphere to where he was selling stadium tours. Now eventually he slips up with that Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, trying to go toe-to-toe with Eminem, sparky freestyles, just like Gordon Hayward. Eventually moved on from the stardom he reached in Utah, goes to Boston, suffers that major injury, and all of a sudden has to get back to the basics this year. So underappreciated, Celtics fans would willingly across the board ship this guy out for a big man, talent of that degree, just as I think many rap fans wouldn't and aren't all that sad to see Logic go as he moves on to Twitch streaming, what I think ultimately is going to be a late night style variety show where he'll certainly continue to riff off some freestyles, share some new material, much like the Roots are doing with The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon at this point in their careers. Logic is going over there for millions of dollars, So there's certainly going to be something grand. He's not just going to be talking off the cuff on Twitch and doing a few live streams like Instagram Live. This is going to be a bigger production, and we will keep Logic in the public eye. But before that happens, he released a No Pressure project to wrap his career, at least on the Warner Brothers Visionary Music Group side, that I think is him getting back to basics, him sharing some incredibly witty writing, packing it into an hour, perfect time frame for this thing. And were there some cornier moments? Sure. Were there some interpolations like GP4 and the Perfect Harmony, You and Me line, especially on a song like Elevators by Outkast that is so prominent, so impactful in the retrospective history of hip-hop that there's nothing subtle about it. It's in your face, and the interpolation isn't that great. He's done better with that kind of stuff in the past, and he does a better job on Man I Am, where he channels some Spodeodidopolicious and Erykah Badu. We also see him reflecting on the backstory of his life, getting into nearly being taken out of his parents' home, putting into a stepfamily, given the status at his house growing up, and Five Hooks. I love the riff on here. And the vocal performance at the transition point in this song, where he says, "Life is a blessing and a curse, depending on how you use it. Some days I'm happy, some days I'm fucked up. Some days I tell my voice in my head to shut the," as it cuts to the transition. Technically savvy, one of the great technical rappers of this generation, I'd say. Songwriting, phenomenal. And takes a screenplay swing on it. Witty, absolutely. I love my wife like I am Chance. Come on. That's some self-deprecation and a little jab at another relevant rapper. Logic was never willing to trade legitimate barbs with others in the game, sell himself short personality-wise. He was always going to be himself. He was always going to be a positive, bright personality, someone you can root for, and I think hip-hop need that. There was very little to hate about Logic unless you really got sucked into the memes about the biracial lines and the corniness of it. Did he have flops? Certainly. Features especially. Sometimes he did step out of his lane a little bit and do things like that French Montana feature that caught the Joe Budden vitriol. But all in all, an excellent career. I'm excited to break down this album today with Anthony Obas as we get to in the second half of this episode. First half though, versus music industry, quarantine. It's an ongoing conversation on Dome Theory podcast and that Snoop Dogg DMX moment last week. Moment we'll remember for a long time in the legacies of both of those legendary artists. We're going to get into the structure of verses, the potential it brings to smaller artists, as well as just that fun event with Jamel Smith today. Obas and Jamel in the same studio. Can't beat that. I'm Bobby Manning. This is Dome Theory. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on iTunes, all the streaming platforms, realbobmanning.com. Check out our conversation with Dart Adams last week about the erasure of Boston's Black and Latino populations and how they are not the main associations with the city, despite being the people who walk its streets. Appreciate you. Thanks for following along with my new YouTube series. Watch the breakdown. Drake Ode right there. As we keep diving into film from this NBA return, which I hope is going to continue. As promised, we got Anthony Obas here. We got Jamel Smith here. I've been excited about this one for a couple weeks. We're here on a Music Monday, late on Monday night. You'll be hearing this on Tuesday. Versus, we're finally going to get into that topic. I've mentioned on a few of our past shows, Dome Theory. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, on Spotify, and all the different podcast platforms, and go back to some of my past Music Mondays with Mel. But I didn't get enough of a feel of it back then, and I didn't dig into enough of the background of the company, the platform, all that stuff, because I think there's major implications that could come out of this. This has kind of been the most impactful medium that we've seen throughout this quarantine period. So I'm glad two of my good friends here bring some expertise on this topic in terms of music business. We got Anthony Obas from Syracuse. You've heard him on here before in March. He was flushing the toilet as we were talking about the Nets. There's a metaphor there.
I love it. I love flushing the toilet.
So he wrote the book, Shifting Your Music into a Career. Manages independent artists, consults them, wrote about all the different techniques they can do. I think there's another book to be written this quarantine about the future of the music industry. Have you been thinking about that all, Obas?
No, but we got something in the works, so don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
And then Mel, of course, dropped an album with his dad during quarantine, L. Spencer Smith. You can get that hooked on all the streaming platforms, preferably by... iTunes is still out there. You know what I mean? Yeah, don't bootleg Obas's book and don't stream.
Right.
Don't stream hooked if you don't have to. Right. It's a tough time for the music business, guys. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The tours are over. I saw one industry official said he doesn't expect touring back till 2022, which was just crazy. Yeah. I think I said that on the show last week. So all of a sudden we get these virtual concerts. We still got merchandise. But this medium versus is so intriguing to me because we have Snoop Dogg DMX last week, and they get over 2 million views between Instagram and Apple alone. And we consider everything that got viewed on YouTube after. I wouldn't doubt that there was as many as 5-10 million people who watched this thing, who tuned in. I think I had about 4 billion impressions in terms of tweets, Facebook posts, all that stuff across social media. So this was by far the most impactful, most transcendent versus yet, and just showed the immediate power and reach that the platform has. I wonder though, are there any long-term implications for this, for smaller artists, Obas? I mean, we see legends on here duking it out. I don't know, though. Will this have any impact, you think? I know these guys own the company. They run in the background. Can you see any use out of this for smaller artists, you think?
I mean, like, for example, I definitely see the verses being implemented in the small independent, in like the independent scene for local artists. But I think it wouldn't be as effective as what verses is supposed to be, right? A part of me thinks that this Versus is also to display a lot of catalog that we missed. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I missed a ton of Teddy Riley's catalog, and somebody should hang me for not listening to Teddy Riley like that. I'll be real with you. Somebody should hang me up for that, because I'm like, no, Teddy Riley had some classics, and I didn't realize that until the Versus came out, you know? Talking about the Jada and the Fabulous situation, right? I didn't know that Jada wrote Victory for P. Diddy. So again, like, there's just so much catalog with these Versus battles, and I just don't think it would be effective it could be used in an independent scene, but I don't think it would be effective because a lot of independent artists don't have catalog on catalog to match up against other artists. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you do kind of, you have to build up that resume over the course of decades, kind of Snoop and DMX had and some of these other guys have. That's a good point. There's got to be some elements that could be pulled from this, though, Mel.
And I mean, I'm pretty sure we've seen this in different, in different iterations, battle rapping. That's pretty much what this is, except instead of, freestyling, which I think that's a special part of this Versus, is that they actually did get to freestyle.
Yeah.
But, the main focus is pretty much the catalog. And, you have 20 plus songs that you have to go through, and that's not necessarily as feasible for an independent artist. And even if it is, it won't draw the crowd that, Versus is known for drawing. You just got through saying, over 2 million people saw it, which is crazy. But, you wouldn't expect that if it was just, an independent artist or even a local artist, with their, that type of affinity to them. So there are some elements that could be applied, but if we're looking at the main scope of what Versus is as a company and also as a cultural landscape, I don't think it'll, be the perfect fit for independent artists.
It's good for the moment, too. I think there's been a lot of talk about this
Quibi thing that they got going that
like 15 minute shows
on your phone. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of reactions that go buses to it. Well, that's really, kind of how I feel. So that's my one gripe with this Versus thing is that, like, you know, I'm watching it. I'm locked in. I'm sitting there for the 2 hours. And I'm trying to text people about it, like, while I'm watching it. But you got to close the Instagram stream. All of a sudden, you miss, like, 30 seconds of the 2 minutes of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
It's not something you can easily blast up on your TV. Like, this is something I would want to be in front of the TV watching on, like, the big screen.
Right.
And all this, you know, all you have is this, like, little sliver upright camera view of on your phone. I think what's been overestimated with a lot of this stuff is how much people actually want to watch stuff on their phone. Like, there's a time and place, you know, if you're on the subway, if you're sitting in the passenger seat of the car, you know, definitely in the passenger seat. Yeah, that's maybe a place where you'd want to watch this. But, like, there are some limitations to, like, a phone exclusive medium.
Right.
Yeah. It was, like, damn near impossible to watch the whole thing. I was driving back from Atlanta at the time when it was on. So, you know, if I wanted to, like, I don't know, make a tweet, because at the same time, there is a social element to it. So just watching Versus on Instagram is not really
the point, you need the phone,
right?
Like, you need the computer, right. You can have three
you
devices.
Need to be live tweeting, like, yeah, exactly.
You need to engage with
that
it.
That definitely, right, exactly. So that definitely, you know, is a con of it, but I try to make it work as best as possible and try not to miss too many things. So, yeah, that was a...
You know what's crazy about it, Mel? I really thought originally the Versus was going to come out on Tidal, honest to God. And people would have to go over to Tidal to kind of listen to the Versus and stuff, you know what I mean? So, I mean, they might even need to take it to the next level and just have it on, like, every, you know, IG... Tidal, YouTube, and stream it live. You know what I'm saying? So,
you got the bootleg on YouTube. I think they're streaming it live on Apple now. And people were actually, our buddy Jordan there, Mixtape Magazine, he was upset because he thought it was actually moving exclusively to Apple and off the Instagram platform. But it's actually just a second stream there. And then I think Tidal has the audio replay that you can stream afterwards.
Right.
It brings us back to this. The money conversation is the big one, right? I mean, Obas, you can get people to pay to come to your shows. Those are off the board now. And frankly, even this one, like, these are just guys doing it for the love of the music, for the culture, that kind of stuff. And there's not really a big amount of income associated with it. You might be able to have some advertising inroads. I saw some bottles on the tables there between DMX and Snoop and those are never a mistake.
Pay product. Very nice.
So,
product placement.
So this is the kind of stuff you can do.
No. Don't get me started with product placement.
Sure.
You know how that shit is.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It was all Snoop too.
Yeah.
Someone's gonna get DMX some products. I don't know. Well, what can we get for DMX, Obas?
I don't know what we get DMX, man. I mean, I don't know what would work for him. Right. I guess the Rock would work.
They were sitting there, right? I think that was on his side. And then Snoop had the 19 Crimes wine, which I love to see because that's actually a wine I enjoy. So I'm willing to go out and get that bottle for him. You know, I hate mentioning brands here on the show because we want our own sponsors here. But that's one I'll give a shout to. I enjoy it. This show was awesome. So I'm going to take you inside my day. I know Obas was kind of in and out about it. And, you know, you caught bits and pieces of it, live version, Mel. I was up and ready for this thing. I know I was texting Obas early that morning. I'm not normally someone who wakes up early, but I was up early that morning. I had to go run some errands in the car. And so I'm listening to Sway on the radio. And this is what I love about this, ultimately, business aside, is the feeling associated with this. He's playing the old songs, the old Snoop Dogg hits, Doggy Style, Rhythm and Gangsta, all that stuff. And then, you know, I'm not someone who's as familiar with DMX. I didn't grow up on him. I've never been a big fan. And I just hear not only the wave of callers coming in and just, like, making the pitch for him to win, saying all the memories and, like, the mental health inroads that he made and how they grew up on him. And people were just, I knew Snoop Dogg was going to have his fans, but the people out of New York City, especially, I believe, and even Mass to some degree too, like the whole Northeast, they just have this reverence for him that I didn't expect, that I heard, and the passion that came out of the radio that morning just really inspired me. And from you too, Obas, like you were like raving about this guy. You were backing him to win. Like, there was just this resonance of him, this legacy of him that came out in full force in the lead up.
Listen, man, when you talk about New York culture, right? You think about, you had the Biggie, the Jay, but, you know, the Rough Riders had, where the Rough Riders captured New York City in between, like, your Biggie and your 50 Cent. You feel me, Mel? So, like, they had, I mean, they had Eve, they had Swizz Beatz on the production. You had the whole LOX gang on that. So you had all this Rough Rider up in like the whole New York City. Again, I'm always, that's what I love about these verses, because it also brings me back to understanding, like, yo, I wish I was in New York culture during then, because there's no really New York artists or New York culture now. It was supposed to be Pop Smoke, rest in peace, but it's not that. But I mean, like, the whole Rough Rider gang, they captured a culture of like this bully season, right? And that whole, it's weird, because it's just like, you had West Coast was about, you know, you had the G-Funk and you also had some gangster rap, but you also here, you had like that New York, like that New York toughness coming out from, especially from Yonkers,
right,
which we didn't even think about during that time of like artists coming out. You know what I mean? Cause you had Wu-Tang from Staten Island. Then you had what? Oh, shoot. Then you had Jay-Z and them gang coming out of, you had Nas coming out from Queens. You had Jay-Z Brooklyn. From the Bronx, you had Terror Squad. You had Terror Squad of South Bronx. Mm. And then, oh, shit. And then you had Rough Riders up. You had it's Yonkers, but some people call it Upper Bronx. I call it Upper Bronx. It's the same shit. It's Westchester, actually. But but it's Westchester, actually. People are going to kill me for that.
They're not going to call it that, though.
They are going to call it that. But it's just like, you know, Rough Riders created that culture, and man. And like when you heard DMX going on a track, he had a sense of viciousness, like a dog. You know what I mean? And everybody wanted to embrace that. Before even that time, I personally think before there was a Travis Scott, there was a DMX. DMX was selling out shows.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, he was selling out shows. Like, he had the whole country on uproar. I mean, like, I'm not connected to Snoop Dogg like that because I'm not from the West Coast, but I could tell you straight up, just growing up here in New York during like the DMX Rough Riders, it was huge, huge.
Yeah, for sure. You know? I think my case is like really interesting because I was born and raised in Alabama, so I rep the South like a lot. I didn't necessarily have an affinity towards either artist. But I do, you know, going back to that time, like the late 90s, I definitely remember DMX being everywhere, because at that time everybody, like, we all watched BET, like that was just a thing. And DMX, he was everywhere. So but I must say I wasn't as familiar with his catalog as I was Snoop Dogg, because I feel like at this point Snoop Dogg is a mainstream, he's practically a pop artist, I mean, in my opinion.
Like, there isn't a word for it, Mal, because I saw Jeff Weiss say this, and I can't argue against it. Like, there probably are arguments against it, but he came out that night and said, Snoop Dogg might be the greatest entertainer of all time.
Right.
It's arguable. Like we watched him for, like, 2 hours, and, like, we all decided that he should be the host of something. Like, he has that thing that everybody just wants to gravitate towards. And I think that might have clouded some commentary about who actually won the versus, if that's what you're, you know, because some people are like, you know, nobody wins, the culture wins, and it's all good. But
that's the joke of it.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, whatever.
Love how there's that joke in the format too. Like, it's versus, it's a battle. I remember one podcast host at the very beginning of it was like, there aren't any rappers on here actually battling. Like, that should be the thing on these live streams. But this eventually took on this thing where they're not actually battling. You saw this between DMX and Snoop. Like, DMX, he didn't have a ton of energy. You know, he's definitely not in the best shape of his life. He's gone through a lot at this point.
Much older.
And, you know, Snoop was there. being his hype man, getting him raved up to do the freestyle at the end. He was winding this guy up all night, and they had a support. They had a, you know, mutual respect between each other. So even though this is versus, there's really no battle at all, even though people are keeping score.
Right. I think that's what makes the best, you know, episodes or whatever, like the best series, is when the artists are actually, they're fans of each other. And we know you are. So, like, don't be on no, like, 90s New York shit, like, or hip-hop shit. Like, we know y'all not trying to fight. We get it. Like, it's great. Yeah, it was just great to see these old guys, like, talking and going through the catalog and, you know, supporting each other. That part was great to me. That's also what made, like, Jill Scott and Erykah Badu, that's what made them go off. So I love that element of it. Plus the, you know, the educational element. You get to learn, you know, learn new shit that you haven't heard of, like people writing songs that you had no idea. So as a music nerd, that's what makes me, you know, excited. But
that's one of my favorite things. Yeah. You hear a guy wrote this for this, or, and then it ended up being his own hit.
That's incredible.
I'm trying to think with any examples of that out of this one. I know Obus mentioned the Jadakiss one. This one, I think the big one was, I don't know if you missed this, Obus, but Get At Me Dog. DMX,
oh, for real?
DMX said that Snoop Dogg inspired that phrase.
That was crazy, man. That was
literally
that came. What album was it? It was the Red album. Oh my god. Hell is Hot. That's where it came off. Yeah, I didn't know that. When you told me that, I was like, yo, that's freaking crazy, y'all. That was like my anthem. It was that one, and Rough Riders Anthem was like that. Those were my songs right off that album. Yeah, game changing album for me. I think it came out 1998. So like, that was a game changing album for me as well too. I mean, you know what's a good thing about this also, and like Mel can attest to this, the thing about the Snoop and the DMX situation, it felt like it was a two versus battle, because you also got Pharrell versus Swiss on the beat, and most of
let's talk about it.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, Mel, I'm not gonna lie to you, if we're going between DMX and Snoop, if it wasn't for the productions of Pharrell, right? I think Snoop really won that, because you also had the help of Pharrell on the productions. Like, we keep forgetting how good Pharrell is as a producer.
Yeah, for sure. And if it's not Pharrell, then you have Dr. Dre. So it's kind of sort of like,
that was unfair. I mean, frankly,
like, it's crazy. It's crazy. So but DMX was, hung in like every round. He hung in. So
I almost felt like going in, you had to say Snoop Dogg just had to leave the Chronic stuff aside, because that album, to be able to throw that in as de facto part of your catalog, like, that just puts you over the edge when you already have like a solo catalog like Snoop Dogg has. And he threw those in there right from the very beginning. He had Deep Cover, Fuck With Dre Day, Bitches Ain't Shit toward the end. Like, he wasn't shy about throwing that part of his career in there, and it put him over the edge. I was surprised with how well DMX fought, though. He started slow. I'm looking at the mixtape scorecard here. They gave Snoop 4 out of 5. And then ultimately, you go toward X at the end with the late resurgence, which I was surprised about. He did get an intermission, though. That helped him.
Yeah. Wow. The intermission was great.
So...
DMX called that too, Obus. He was like, I need some water. And then Snoop was like, all right, we'll take an intermission.
Oh, dudes, I love it.
I love it, man. Two legends going at it.
Well, Snoop wanted to take a break. He was they were playing some music in between. He was dancing. He was sipping all different kinds of stuff. I think DMX was even in awe of how much he was drinking. There was smoke in the air.
Snoop is like, I don't even think he's aged, honestly. He's still a stick. Like, he's just as energetic. I don't know.
The weed! That's a great question.
Is that it?
Also, that could be it. So
he's got the good stuff. If there's great stuff, he's getting it. We're going to wrap this up on the other side and finish this conversation about the verses and the business implications. This is the guy who put
the
himself.
Brand is brolic, man.
No, you know how we do. The branding is key, man.
Mel, this is a guy who put himself in one. No, it wasn't one of his artist songs, but someone he met, they made a song, and he put himself on there just talking. He didn't do a verse. He didn't sing. He just put himself on there talking.
That's how you do it.
Mel,
spoken word.
It's product placement.
Right, exactly.
Right. All right, we continue our conversation with Jamel Smith, with Anthony Obas, on the topic of DMX versus Snoop Dogg and the Versus series. The series had its rough patches, Mel.
Yes.
It had the Nelly situation, and those issues parlayed into some memes, into some stuff that pushed the brand forward. As we talk about a brand, I mean, you had the tweets of Nelly looking like a GTA character with the pixelation. Who else was struggling with their connection out there? Oh, Teddy Riley.
Teddy Riley, indeed. Oh. Yeah, that was the worst.
Oh, y'all forget the first one with Tim and Tim.
Were there issues there too?
Oh my God,
like, I missed that one.
Oh, bro, it was so bad. Swiss thing was so bad.
So they recruited this company in Japan. Yeah, they put their foot down and were like, you need to work with this company in Japan on the sound equipment, on the Wi-Fi equipment, if you need to do your concert at home. Initially, it was the streams between the two artists over the internet, so I think that made it a little tougher. Snoop and DMX were in the same place, and it looked smooth. They were in a studio. They probably had the personnel there to work it. But that's another pitfall of the stuff, Obas. And, you know, Mel knows this well tonight. If your Wi-Fi screwed up, you can't create any content. And, you know, when everybody's at home, I think the first month or two of the quarantine, people had big internet issues because everybody was just overloading the internet trying to do stuff, especially with Zooms. And you know, you're talking about the infrastructure of DJing through your computer, all this different stuff is just overloading.
Right. You know, apparently, wasn't 5G supposed to come out during quarantine too?
We could have used it. Situation.
Maybe that shit could have helped it, man. But we got to see. I mean, it's going to be interesting how, like, everything shifts now in terms of music-wise, right? In terms of live performance especially. So I'm very curious to see what this Versus does for everything.
Mel, do you think this streaming, this live concerts on the internet, that kind of stuff, is this just for the moment? Or is there more to be done with this? Because I know you don't see a lot of relevance of the Versus formats. I guess we'll move past this. But there's got to be something out of this quarantine period that carries forward. Does the internet just suck?
So I doubt. I think that by implementing like virtual concerts and virtual tours, which is happening actually right now. So I thought that was an interesting concept. But by implementing that in this kind of in this season right now, it could make sense. You know, people still need jobs, so you know, you can rent out of a space and like kind of flip it to, you know, stay there and do those certain performances, certain tours, or whatever that you need to do as artists to kind of promote your music. But I don't see that carrying once all of this ends. I'm pretty sure like everybody wants to be at this point, everybody wants to be around each other, and I think that's a huge part of the music listening experience, is to be around people.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you're trying to experience it live. So I don't think staying in a virtual setting, you know, once we're able to be around each other is going to work. But it is interesting to see like who has, you know, gravitated towards it right now and who hasn't gravitated towards it. I think that the music business as a whole is kind of lagging on this that really
tell
does
me about
surprise
it.
Me as they lag on pretty much everything single thing, so yeah.
So what are you doing with your artists right now, Obas?
Well, Mel, I'm about to answer your question, Bob, but Mel, I've heard that I was reading an article on Billboard. A lot of them are trying to do drive-in performances. And I'm like, who the fuck is gonna try to turn up in the car? Like, driving concerts. Like, please explain to me who the fuck is going to turn up in a fucking car. What am I gonna do? Beep to every fucking performance? Are you fucking stupid?
Yeah, like,
are you fucking stupid? Yeah. Like, it's supposed to be an experience. So like, everybody's trying to figure out a way to do this shit. And like, let's be real. Health is wealth here. Like, if the shit is not healthy, then we ain't going no fucking where. All right, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, that's the thing, right? We got to fix the initial issue ultimately here, and just get back to the way things were if we get past it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and for sure. So like, so what I'm doing now in terms of like, I think all artists should be doing is like, yo, everybody's on the internet, fucking run some ads, get some people to start fucking with your music. Like, you gotta get your brand, you gotta get your brand out there, you gotta get aware. Like, you might as, everybody's on the internet like crazy, like get out there. But I don't know, Mel, I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of people have been hesitant to be put out music. And I'm just like, just put it out.
Yeah. You know? I mean, of course, we know, like, it all comes to, like, dollars and cents. So, you know, artists and labels, they're trying to make sure that whatever, you know, investment that they put out, they're able to get something back. Right. However, at this point, there are limitations, and we understand that. But like you said, utilizing what you do have, which is the internet, which is limitless, virtually limitless, there are ways around it. And, you know, you kind of have to be proactive and, you know, looking for those ways. And again, most people are, you know, at this point are comfortable with doing it the traditional way and not really have to fool with the internet in that way. So I understand why people are like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to release any music right now, which makes it really interesting. This is another topic, but which makes it really interesting that Taylor Swift, I know, I hate myself for even mentioning her, but Taylor Swift actually released an album and is going full force with it. Let's talk about it. but yeah, she's going full force, like, in this instance. And of course, you have to weigh who she is and what she has access to. You know, a lot of artists do not have that. But I found it to be really impressive, especially, you know, when people are like, I don't want to release any music to the public, which sucks because music kind of helps all of this go pretty smoothly, I guess.
I've actually been surprised with the amount of stuff that has come out. So we'll get back to those adjustments you're making, Obas, with your artists right now, because there is such a difference between the haves and the have-nots in the industry. Yeah. Like, if you get the big backing, if you're a Taylor Swift, you're a Weeknd, they can find ways to push that and make it work. I mean, people aren't in the stores buying these records anymore, but they're figuring out ways to push it and sell it in a way that can maximize the streaming and all that stuff. So on your end, on the independent music side, What have you done in terms of adjustments with your Nick Moody, with your Jahari, the different artists you're working with?
Well, I mean, like I said, we're trying new freaking marketing skills, right? Like, and I'm not gonna lie, this is the time to experiment with so much shit, right? I literally went to I literally got my Common Finding Forever CD. And I'm just like, bro, like, you can give, like, you know, try to sell these little booklets that people used to put in CDs and vinyls, right? As like a way of album breakdown. Just showing who produced it, who made it type shit. Like, people used to feed for these shit. Yes. Who wrote it. You feel me? Like, you see what I'm saying, Mel, right?
I miss those, but, yes.
that was an experience, right? And then for sure. I'm looking at this other thing I found again, like ringtones. Like, people be forgetting, like, there's royalties in ringtones. Mm-hmm. So figuring out, you know, ways to create like a ringtone, like this is an opportunity for us to pivot, because, like, you know, the whole 360 deal, the whole like model of business is getting reformed. You get what I'm saying? Yep. Like, it's getting reformed. So we got to think about things that was work. I'm not going to lie to you, Mel. I feel like this is about to go back to nineties music, bro, where everybody's on the street. You got the whole speakers, and that's how you promote your music. So we've been really just studying how music was done in the past type shit. You get the fucking Jesus. I always get that shit messed up. The big radio with the big speakers, the boombox.
The boombox.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
You're bringing back the boombox?
Bro, listen, man. Because you know what the thing is? It was, think about this, man. Because like everybody's looking, everybody's going to want to go outside. We're in phase four in New York and people still going outside and turning up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got the restaurant tables on the sidewalks. Like I've seen the scene and it looks interesting. Like a lot of people are just out in the streets. And you talk about the protests too. I mean, people out there with the protests every day. So there are people in the streets. I don't know if we'll get the boombox, but there's something there.
There's something there. So I mean, like, this is an opportunity, no matter what genre you're in, like, you've got to think, you have to think of the things that you missed when things were happening, but you also got to think of, like, what's to come, you know what I mean? Like, like I said, I told Nick Moody last week, I was like, yo, I don't think we're going to see a show until 2022, you know, in America. That doesn't mean that, you know, it's not going to happen in other places, but in 2022, I mean, depending on what happens in November, I don't think by 2022 we're going to see live shows happening, right?
Right.
So it's just that, you know what I mean? Now, so like I think right now it's just like for everybody in terms of independent artists who don't have the money, like use the internet. You know, like the goal should be if you gain 2 followers each day, you got to convert them into fans. You know what I mean? Send them a link to the album.
For sure.
Send them to the Bandcamp. So. I mean, that's what I've been doing on the local level. How you been holding up, Mel?
You know, it's pretty much the same thing. I think that's the objective industry-wide, especially if you have independent artists, you know, like you said, that don't have access to major backing like that. It's all about pretty much the meeting of the minds and what you can kind of bring to this landscape, like this virtual landscape. And I think the key for that is, you know, using the internet and finding new ways to market on the internet, like solely on the internet, which has been an interesting dilemma.
Right.
But, you know, it's challenging. And I think there's some type of enjoyment that comes with, you know, the challenge that, you know, that presents. So, you just have to keep experimenting and, you know, trying new shit and hopefully someone will stick.
Yeah, so, the mediums are so interesting because, you know, you got the newsletter now. I think that's catching a little bit of steam.
We talk
about the journalism side and the music side. Those are interesting things. Sort of like a Bandcamp, almost a style of distribution there where you're able to just sell directly to people through the contacts that you have. Set up your own sales position pretty much and ringtones. I'm glad you brought that up, Obus. That's an interesting one. Hopefully Apple will jump on that one, and because you know they got the control of the phones, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, they just have all the control.
You know what's gonna happen.
And then you know we always talk about merch. Now we got the friggin' mail. The mail's all screwed up. Like we can't win.
It's an interesting time.
Well, you know what's the crazy part is, and Mel, I gotta give you credit on this, man. And a lot of artists that I work with, they hate doing this. But I mean, like, you know, what if you decided to songwrite? It's not hard to songwrite. Like, you write something for somebody, they record it, you get your royalties, you're not complaining about it. But artists are not thinking about that right now. They're not thinking. It's just like I gotta be in front of the people.
That's honestly, you know, that's honestly another conversation for another time. The songwriting industry is a very interesting one. But for sure, if you're able to, you know, I definitely would, you know, encourage artists if they do, you know, have that songwriting, you know, bug or whatever, if they want to go into that space, that's definitely another way to get, you know, to get royalties, you know, for sure. So,
what's the tough part there? Credit, the payment, like what's the biggest hurdle for that as like a means? Because I know freelance writing, like you just run into like chasing people down for payments, getting your ideas accepted. There's a lot of, and the familiarity there too is tough to kind of develop with the way people are moving around.
That's the part right there, the entry part, that it's not the easiest to land placements. So if anything, that would be the biggest hurdle, you know, because of course, once you do get a song placed, of course, you have to, you know, go through publishing and splits and how much, you know, an artist thinks you're owed for the song that you gave them and all that type of bullshit. It's a whole other thing that comes with it. But The first part is actually getting in the room to, you know, place a record, and that's pretty difficult. So, yeah. But yeah, that happens everywhere though. Like, I'm pretty sure it's the same way in the journalism industry. Like, it's
there's a lot of parallels.
It's just how it is. Yeah, for sure.
I definitely noticed. Obas put me on in the Facebook ads the other day, and it worked in my favor for my YouTube series that I'm starting there. I watched the breakdown. So definitely go check that out on my YouTube channel. We're going to finish up this DMX Snoop Dogg conversation. Obas, do you concede? Did Snoop take away this one? Did he just pull it out the way a lot of people thought he was going to?
Like I said to you before, I said I had DMX going in. I was just looking at I didn't tune in, but looking at the catalog, man. Like, again, me and, like, Mel said it earlier, when you got Dr. Dre and you got Pharrell, and you got Snoop, like, what more can you do? So I gotta give it to Snoop on this one, man.
Like, he left albums on the table too. Like, I see he didn't do The Bush.
He did not play Snoop.
Central Seduction got left on the table. And the Mac and Devin album, like, that was a good one too. Nothing wrong with that. What's that? He had a hit that was on the radio for like a year and a half. I'm trying to think. The one with Bruno Mars there.
Did he perform that Akon song?
Young, Wild, and Free. No, he didn't do that one either. Like,
There was another one. I think it's called, not Smack That, but it's another one. It's a bag in 03, but I don't think he did that. And you know what song I'm surprised he didn't do to be a goofball? That Katy Perry song.
Yeah.
He could.
Yeah. I don't think that would have worked well for him.
Yeah, he knew what he needed to do to win, though. Like, he.
Yeah.
And he knew what he needed to do to put on a show. Like, you said this earlier, Mel. This guy just has such a control over his audience, over his fan base, over just staying relevant. Like, we think about the different places this guy has been, game shows, streaming, doing those goofy videos on his phone attacking Kanye. Like, whatever he needs to do to stay relevant. Yes, the Martha Stewart show. He can do anything he wants to stay relevant. And honestly, if you're ranking like the 10 most recognizable Americans, we talk about greatest entertainers ever, but this guy, like, you ask anybody on the street, if do you know Snoop Dogg, you know, white, black, Latino, rich, poor, like, everybody knows this guy. And this is someone who was, you know, a West Coast gangster rapper when the scene was getting set out there, and was just this unknown, I don't know, what was he, 18, 19 when he got started?
Yeah.
And just the way he's reverberated is just so unbelievable. And you see the energy he has out there too. Like, this was 2 hours in and he started busting freestyles. He was winding up DMX for his freestyle. Oh my God, the energy, the consistency, and just the level on which he does the stuff. He's had some flop albums for sure, but
yes.
But ultimately, like, he's putting energy, passion in everything he does.
For sure. Yeah. I would have to agree. I think that Snoop won, but I will say that it was very close. It was closer than I ever planned. DMX came with it. I kind of forgot how epic his catalog is, because when we think about like DMX, I feel like all of his songs are in action movies or like some type of shit. Like, I feel like they're in trailers, and every song that he was coming with, I was like, wow, I know this song. Like, so I mean, I think in order for him to match a catalog like Snoop Dogg's, he had to come, you know, with all these epic songs, and I think he did what he came to do. You know, it kind of, the disparity kind of happened when it got into the freestyle. I know that wasn't an official part of the verses, but for the main parts, I think that DMX definitely held his own, but Snoop, he got it.
Snoop didn't write that freestyle at the end or plan it before, my mind is just blown. And I'll
apparently
send it to
he is an amazing freestyler. So,
blew my mind. And then the way he winded up DMX for that segment too. Ultimately, that's why you got to give it a Snoop, because, you know, bless DMX. Yeah. I saw Liz Robbins, our friend of the show, said we're lucky to still have him, period, with his addictions and mental health and that kind of stuff. And, you know, all the different legal issues he's had. Like, just see him out there was special. And he was making fun of himself too. He was like, I'm going to take my shirt off and we're going to look like a 10. So he ultimately was out there having fun. He stood the test of time despite the intermission. It was such a great show. I feel like I could go back and watch that again. You know, when you said he was going to win, I thought it was ridiculous, but he brought it in those final rounds. He threw Wear the Hood at. We weren't sure if he was going to actually play that one with some of the homophobic lines in there, but he just spit them out.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, I don't think there was too much meditation on that from him, but, you know, they just... There was another segment, too, where Snoop Dogg was like, "Where's the ladies at?" And then DMX, he's like, "Where's the bitches?"
I was like, "Yep, this is X."
That was what they had to expect when they brought him out there. Mel Smith, it's always good talking to you on here. I do want to get your thoughts quick. We're talking about this industry. We're about to talk about the last Logic album, me and Obas. And one of the revelations out of this is that he's going to stream, and Twitch signed him for a multi-million-dollar deal. I think he's the first artist on Twitch. So we talk about these mediums and the future of music. If he has anything left in the music industry, it looks like it's going to be through Twitch. I don't know the music potential over there. He could certainly perform. He could certainly tell stories about his career, throw some advice at young artists, given how he came up.
Yeah.
It's going to probably be a variety show, I'd imagine.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was kind of... I was definitely intrigued. I was like, okay, this is interesting. But again, people really didn't think that, you know, streaming services would be in the position that they are now, how they have kind of evolved into these industry players that can kind of go toe-to-toe with, you know, your Universals, your Sonys, and your Warners. But here they are. So I'm interested to see how he does with Twitch. And hopefully he can find a new career there. I think that's a cool way to evolve for him. So, yeah.
Salute to Logic. I can't wait for you to hear the record, Mel. It blew me away. I was impressed by it too. This isn't a guy who's been the most consistent artist through his career, but we're about to break down this album a little bit on the other side. Mel, thanks for being here. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Keep staying
thanks for having me,
man. Mel, love, you too, man. Brother. I got the old busman coming.
Oh, Taylor McLeod or Taylor Williams?
Taylor Williams. She said that's her color. And I'm taking, I think she's going with the darker green. I'm going with the lighter green, like this one right here. Like the Irish flag. This is actually the green of the Irish flag. And our buddy Caleb's Nigeria.
Nigeria.
All right, let's get into this. Logic, No Pressure. It's been a while since we've done one of these Chop Up the Beat sessions here on Dome Theory. But we're going to dig deep into this album because I love Logic, all of us. Like, I frankly do, for three reasons. Come on. Bobby.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Bobby, you got to stand up for your Bobbies. There's not many out there, believe it or not. You got your Roberts, you got your Bobs. But a guy who's going to go by Bobby, I got to stand up for it. I think he brings a feel-good attitude into hip-hop. That I think, you know, it's a little more of a harder, grittier genre overall. So I think people roll their eyes when you see this guy coming in saying positivity and peace and that kind of thing. But I don't think he's sweet enough like Russ to just be completely overwhelmed by that. Like, you know, he goes into grittier topics in his background and that kind of stuff. And then third, I think he's actually innovative. So he definitely borrows from his contemporaries and from the people who he looked up to as artists, and he wears it on his sleeve. But this film adaptation that he brings in, the Tarantino stuff, the incredible true story, the script writing, I think that's pretty innovative. I don't see a lot of other artists kind of building these worlds into their music the way he does. But again, you know, he's got the glasses, he's got the little nerdy look. He's a, you know, very light-skinned guy. So I think the appearance hurts him, the voice hurts him, and just some of the positivity aspect hurts him too. And don't get me wrong, he has made very bad music, but I think he gets more crap than he deserves.
Okay. That's the analysis you want to play.
What do you think of him?
First of all, the guy's trash. Like,
what?
He's so trash.
Overall, in what way?
In what way? Brother has, let's count it up. He has what?
Six this albums.
Album. He has six albums, bro. No, he does. He has six albums, what, two mixtapes?
Under Pressure, Credible True Story, Everybody, Young Sinatra 4, the two Bobby Tarantinos, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And
then this one,
No Pressure. So that's about eight. I don't count the Tarantinos. Those are more mixtapes.
Okay, so he has eight projects. Let's put that all together. He has eight projects. And you're telling me this man went 3 for 8?
That's you didn't like Young Sinatra?
Young Sinatra was cool. But how many times do we have to keep going over, I'm an Oreo, my mom is what? His mom is white and his dad is black. No one wants to hear that constantly again. And he does these weird, like, come on, the 1-800 song? I get it. Like, you know, we're talking about a time where mental health is such a big thing and suicidal. But there's ways of doing that fits your art. And that's the thing that he realized on this album, which is that he got back to his roots with No Pressure. He got back to the roots of how he developed Under Pressure and the Incredible True Story. It was working for him in those two albums, and it worked for him in this last album. If he just kept being consistent with them, he could have went 3 for 3.
Under Pressure was such a special album. The song alone, Gritty, showed endurance. He was able to carry that like 7-8 minutes and you don't get all that bored with it. The boom bap style and the urgency with which he came at it. Like, he was just spinning hard, going for the gold, trying to prove himself. This was at a stage in his life where he was living out of his friend's basement, didn't really have much going for him, and he just threw this project out there that just wowed people. So when I saw he was going to do a sequel to this, I was hoping that there'd be that similar level of urgency and focus, and there was here.
Yes, it was, but for an artist like him, you can't have, you know, and you look at the Incredible True Story, which is a story of him talking about, in the future of his music. If I remember the story, like, it was his music. It was his music being discovered, and was talking about his music in a futuristic time period, right?
Yeah.
That, what was the one where he talked about him dying and go to heaven? What was that? It was that every, wasn't off that every, the Everybody one, which, funny enough, the cover art got taken from your boy Freddie Gibbs, He took that cover art from Freddie Gibbs. Yes, sir. What was it? You Only Live Twice. Check that out. And they got beef off of that. Check that out. That's another reason why I don't like Logic.
Logic started doing this on his second album. He took on this greater importance where he would do these skits where, like you said, people were listening to his music in the future and saying, oh my God, is this his last album? He did this too before with the retirement thing, going into Young Sinatra. He said, I'm retiring. This is going to be my last album. And then the intro cuts them listening to his music in the future saying, is this his last album? And they're like, nope, this is his last mixtape. Ha ha. And I'm just like, oh my. So you hear that again. And now it's like, all right, is he really retiring? I always hated the retirement thing. Jay-Z did it. Nicki Minaj did it. It feels like every artist has a retirement that they don't actually hold to. And it's almost certain we're going to hear from Logic again. He's 30.
Right, you know, but I think this album, and again, like, the whole point of retirement is, like, I'm taking a break. Yeah. That's really what people be like, I'm taking a break and I'm coming back. But, I mean, Logic really, I think this album was to reconnect with who Logic was. I mean, he got No ID back on this. He referenced.
Oh, and he was so good.
So good, right? He had, like, I mean, he talked about his influence with Kanye West, man. He sampled a ton of Outkast, Elevator, and then he sampled Lupe Fiasco, which was like wow to me. Which I didn't expect that at all either, personally. I mean, like, the guy did his justice talking about the good storytelling on this one. This was an album that we were looking for. It wasn't the fucking Bobby Tarantino number two. It wasn't the freaking, I didn't even listen to the Confessions drink. That's how much I got over it.
Bobby, no, me neither.
You know what I'm saying? But it's just like, when you have albums like Under Pressure and The Incredible True Story, and you do great storytelling like that, right? Maybe it could have been his time to experiment. That's why you had the Bobby Tarantino as his way to experiment with new things, right? But when you have albums like Everybody, then you have that Confessions joint, and then you have the YSF. And I'm not saying they're bad, but they're not Under Pressure and Incredible True Story.
He tried to do too much on those projects. He was building a world on Incredible Story, this whole script. And again, I commend it for him. It was a risk. I think there were good tracks on there. It paid off well. But you can't do everything. And when he got to Everybody, you could have called that album Everything, because he tried to do everything. Meditations on Race, The Future, Society, all this different stuff, Dying and Coming Back, Religion, every single topic was just stuffed in there like a box, and it was overflowing, and it was so bloated.
And the problem is also he lost his craft. He didn't get back. Like, this Logic, the No Pressure, Under Pressure, The Incredible True Story, that is logic. That is how logic storytelling is. When you start deviating away from that, and I kid you not, I was with an artist yesterday about this. When you start trying to reach for concepts instead of concepts coming to you naturally,
yeah,
the production, the delivery, the, you know, the storytelling becomes so corny. It becomes so corny. And that's why a lot of people are kind of, you know, were over Logic from like 2015 to 2019. Well, 2020, like, he really redeemed himself with his album, but I don't think this album can recover from those albums from 2015 to 2020. You know what I mean? Those time periods. I don't think he can discover. But I mean, like, again, he got this Twitch deal. He's got, you know, he's got the kid. I mean, maybe this album can have him, help him pivot. He's only 30 years old. You know what I'm saying? So he has a long time to actually, and it's crazy to think about it, because, you know, you really don't find your sound until you're early 30s in a sense.
Yeah. And he had a full career worth of stuff in 10 years, pretty much, between the Under Pressure and this one. He became ginormous in a way that I think was stunning for who he is. Ultimately, just this boom bap rap enthusiast who's trying a lot of different things that he looked up to growing up. And, you know, he'll play with some of the J. Cole concepts, the Mac Miller stuff on his mixtapes, especially the way he sampled on Kids. He's talked about that. So, like, he's willing to borrow from his contemporaries too, as well as the past, the Outkast stuff he did on here, which I think is fine. Some people don't like that. I think he does it in a more fruitful way than Drake, where he spins it off on his own on a lot of these tracks. I love the way he molded Erykah Badu's Didn't You Know with Spodeody. Oh, great beat, beautiful. Great transitions. Oh. I didn't like the Elevator one as much. Playing off the chorus as me and you in this perfect harmony. That one was a little on the corny side. And, you know, he has his corny moments. I won't admit it. Here's why I don't like people blasting him. I'm a technical guy. I love flow. I love rhythm. I love wordplay, rhyme schemes, all that kind of stuff. And he is technically proficient. You can't deny that. He raps fast. He raps in a ton of different flows. He can emulate guys. He can do a ton of different stuff. And he has other skills too, storytelling, all the other stuff. So he's not just a guy like, you know, Busta Rhymes. I don't want to put him in that hole, but he's just a guy who rapped fast. And
Twister.
Yeah, Twister is the better one. I don't want to do that to Busta Rhymes. Twister was the guy who could rap fast, and that was his thing. I think Logic brings a little bit more to the table, but you have a lot of rappers today who just don't have technical skill. And so for people to look at Logic and say, this guy stinks, and not even acknowledge his technical skill to me, it is unfair, because you have a lot of rappers right now who couldn't even bust a freestyle, who couldn't battle, who couldn't do, you know, wordplay, any of that stuff.
Well, I'll tell you this, right? His Logic's wordplay, Logic's lyricism is dope. The problem is, this is what I'm going to get at you, right? The problem is how, what is the phrasing you said? You can say something the same. You have a theme, but you can say it in different ways, if that makes sense. That's the problem with Logic. It's like Logic is like, when it comes to like breaking down lyrics and actually understanding flow and his rhyming patterns, it's dope. But when you put all of it together, it's like you're saying the same thing. Right, but you're just saying it in different flows, different patterns, right? Different counts. And you're just saying it differently, different breathing, right? So I'm like, for him, it's just like, yeah, Logic is good with on the technicality side, but it's just like, again, why I get pissed off at him is just like, how many times do you have to say the same thing in a different way? You get what I'm saying? It's the art of repetition, right? That's effective in, you know, poetry and spoken words and rap.
For sure. There were two samples on here that intrigued me a ton. So Hit My Line sampled Attention by Robert Hunt, performed by Head West, and Amen was an interpolation of Tyler, the Creator's Running Out of Time, which is already a nod to Igor's impact and legacy, which I love. They both kind of sounded like the running piano line of Liftoff by Jay-Z and Kanye. That was what I heard there, and I'm surprised those weren't the samples. You mentioned the Outkast ones. You had the Erykah Badu interpolation that we mentioned. Production carried this one. And Logic's performance was great. There were some weaker tracks. I didn't love the A to Z one. I didn't love the Elevators riff, as I said. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, his performance, the cohesion with No ID, and the sampling on here that looked back on a better time was fun, interesting, and I thought, you know, able to be connected to on a listener's basis. I love paying odes to the past and doing it in a very clear, concise way. Because, you know, we talked about Drake on this one. Drake does the super line riff, doesn't really even pay homage to Eminem in any way, I thought. Just kind of riffed it and changed two words and made it his own. He did the Jay-Z thing, which, you know, people listen and they'll know what it is. But there was nothing creative about it to me. I think Logic plays off a lot of this stuff in interesting ways that he doesn't make his own, but he shows that he's a fan of these people just like us. And this is how he's going to display it.
Right. I mean, like I said, dude, you got No ID producing your shit, right? No ID has not gone, like, he has not failed in terms of production, right? That's like having Alchemist on a production and telling you that he fails, right? No ID, I mean, didn't No ID produced 444, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, No ID also, I think, he either produced Graduation, Graduation or Late Registration, one of the two. That
well, you hear the parallels between him and Kanye, because that was Kanye's mentor, pretty much.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, like I said, when you have a dope producer like No ID, you just can't go wrong lyrically and right? But and it's curious. Yeah.
What do you think of? Go ahead with that first.
Because it's just like. It's like a producer is supposed to help you be able to deliver your lyrics properly. And if he's not giving you the right pattern or the right flow, right mechanisms, it's kind of tough to do. And I don't think, you know, Logic had that in his albums from 2015 to 2020, if that makes sense.
It reminds me of Kid Cudi in a way. Kid Cudi, the production dynamic. Well, yeah, I mean that one because he fully produced that album and played all the instrumentals and everything. But it started earlier than that, frankly, because he had Amir, who's his producer, and Dot the Genius as well, who were heavily involved with the first two Man on the Moon projects, gave it that cohesive sound, helped Cudi craft his sound. You know, you don't always have to produce your own work to make your own sound. J. Cole does it, but you don't have to. And then he got away from those producers on Indicud and then further on the ensuing albums that followed. And all of a sudden, he didn't have those Man on the Moon sounds there. And that sort of thing happened with Logic to some degree between Under Pressure and then getting back to this one with No Pressure. It's tricky because, you know, we talk about with Kanye, he advanced his sound. Like, he didn't keep the College Dropout sound. He tried a bunch of stuff and progressed throughout time. If you do it well, it can make you a superstar. But if you don't do it well, it can kind of alienate your fans and make for worse albums, frankly. And that's kind of what happened with Logic, right?
Right. And that's the case, you know, because, like, I mean, just not to sidetrack about the Ye situation, but, you know, Yeezus at the time was such a trash album. But if you look at Yeezus now in 2020, you realize where that sound has come, how that sound evolved the music, right? And My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, right? So yeah, I mean, like, again, like, it could go right with the experimentation, it could go wrong, right? It really just depends on who the artist is, right, in a sense.
Do you like Logic I guess since it's his last album, you kind of have to do this, but a lot of meditation on his last work. He had a whole verse on here about the incredible true story and kind of just riffing about like the writing of it to some degree, I think. And he did a Soul Food 2, same beat, chopped up a little differently, but remixed it essentially. And a lot of other allusions to his past work in here. Were you feeling that?
Yeah, I was feeling a lot of allusions to his past work. I mean, yet again, if you're gonna go out with a bang, you gotta thank the albums that came before you on it.
Yeah,
things, right. That kind of molded you. But you know, it's funny that you see how we talked about it. He even knows that those albums after the incredible true story wasn't the best that he could make because he didn't allude to them. So it proves my point that you know he knows that those albums weren't it. You know. So it's great that he alluded in terms of his retirement. And, you know, again, shout outs to him, shout outs to his baby, and goodbye, Logic.
Another Bobby.
Another goodbye, Bobby. Have a good, goodbye, Bobby.
Well, you know, maybe it'll inspire me to name my son Bobby if that's the way we go.
No, thank you.
Continue the tradition.
We don't need another Logic.
It's interesting you brought up the revelation on his own albums too, because on A to Z he took like that Eminem approach where you just slap him back at the critics, sick of people chasing him in stores, did a model of the Marshall Mathers LP stuff too, again interpolating some of these past works where he's trying to buy stuff at the store and people asking for his autograph, the paparazzi's there. Fantano asked, does the paparazzi follow Logic? I think they might. I think he's that famous. He's big. Why do people go to this guy's shows? We talk about the 1-800 stuff. That was a mega hit. He performed at the Grammys. Like, this guy became big for what he is.
He's big for what he is, but he knows that's not his true self.
Yeah.
Like, you got to understand, you have to understand, no matter what, like, that 1-800 song was not a Logic song. It was a song, again, you run it up. That's the thing with artists these days. That's a different topic. But you step into that pop genre just to try to get a Grammy, you know, Grammy nomination. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're true to yourself. You get what I'm saying? Like, this is like, I would rather Logic be the incredible true story, Under Pressure, No Pressure, than be the Bobby Tarantino, the Everybody joint. You know, it's about being true to your form. And like, again, and it also comes with the maturity situation, because having a kid switches up, you know, your storytelling switches up, you know, your reflection on life, you know what I'm saying? So it gave him a sense of going back to the situation. So I'm just like, yeah, man, like, again, shout out to Logic for his legend. He's good, whatever he does. I mean, the next person is Eminem, so we'll see what's up.
How about the line, I love my wife like I am Chance?
Again, dumb line.
It was funny to hear someone who's referred to as corny. I wouldn't say it, but people refer to Logic as corny. And so for him to throw that little jab at Chance, like, oh, you're rapping about your wife, when he's someone who's ripped about for the Oreo lines, like you said, was really funny. And ironic. And I think he knew it too there.
He knew it too, but it's just, like I said, it's just, we love this No Pressure album. I think it's you know, top three albums for Logic, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I have to go back to Under Pressure and Incredible True Story to kind of rank it. But I mean, like, I think it's top three for him. You know what I mean? It's a good way to end off this situation. It's a good way to end it off, you know? Well, he's not going to end it off.
He did a little bit of everything in his career. He garnered respect. He got the Wu-Tang Clan to come on a song on that YS4 album.
Remember that.
I think he had impact in terms of feeling with his fans. Your old roommate, Hav, I see a guy like him who's a big fan of this guy. I remember talking to him back in the day about how much he loves this guy. So you had like a Kid Cudi level impact where people would say things like, this guy saved their life. His personality will continue through the show. I'm interested 100%. To see if he just continues to do that show, almost like a late night show kind of thing, like the Roots have done. Like, their career is essentially over, but they have this newfound relevance through the Jimmy Fallon show. That might be the direction he goes in. I don't know if he's going to release more music or not. There might be more inspiration down the line that leads him in that direction. But ultimately, he found a good excuse to go out with the fatherhood, that kind of thing. I think a lot of people can relate to that being a new stage of his life. And he went out the right way with this album. It sounded good. It's going to have replay value. I think it's going to age well, like Under Pressure. And he got back to the basics, like you said, and it worked.
Yeah, shout out to Logic. Now, we love shout out to Logic, man. We appreciate you. You're less of a, you know, instead of being a double stuff Oreo, you're a single stuff Oreo.
So, it made me happy to not only see him go back to that, but just hear from him during this quarantine and get another quality album this year. It's been a good year of music. Could you see this album getting Grammy nominated?
Oh hell no!
What?
Hell no! You talking about hip? We're talking about hip hop right?
Album? Yeah.
Oh god, no. That is not happening. I mean, good album, but I don't think it's going to get it.
It's there for me now, but we'll see what happens the rest of the year. We got another half year to go.
We'll see what happens, but I already know three people that's going to ticket that right now.
Lil Baby, Freddie Gibbs.
And probably J Electronica, maybe.
Maybe. That album didn't do well, not critically, but sales-wise, that kind of stuff.
The Little Uzi Vert. The Little Uzi Vert.
I wonder how much we know the Grammy situation. I wonder how much they're going to start to appreciate those kind of artists now, because Nate Sperling will be backing them heavy.
Yeah, so I think he should get a Grammy nomination. I don't like the album, but that's a different conversation. But
ultimately, respect to Logic, like you said. Is he the greatest artist of this generation? No, he's not up there with the Coles and the Kendricks, that kind of thing. But I think he was a special feel-good artist for this generation. It became bigger than I think anyone could have imagined him being when he first got started. And ultimately, I think he's got a nice discography ultimately going out on. So no pressure. Great performance. This has been Chop Up the Beat, Dome Theory. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you check out Obas. You got a little podcast series going right now, don't you? What's out in terms of that?
It's like a radio show type stuff, and you know,
it's a mix of radio and podcasting, kind of, right? I didn't hear you talking on there a ton. It was more music, though.
It's more radio based. That's the idea we're going for. I only talk for it's more radio based. So the Guided by Obas show, Apple Podcast, Spotify. You know, those podcast platforms. You know, they dig.
Subscribe to Dome Theory as well. We will see you all next week.